Well, hey, how are you today? Time for Ask the Tech Guys. I'm Leo Laporte. Coming up, can you get a private AI?
And I am Micah Sargent, and we answer a question about managing multiple subscriptions for your business with your Apple ID.
And then, spaceman Rod Pyle and his memories of Voyager 1. It's all coming up next on Ask the Tech Guys.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Ask the Tech Guys with Micah Sargent and Leo Laporte. Episode 2021, recorded Sunday, April 21st, 2024. Warp, warp. Well, hey, how are you today? That there's Micah Sargent.
And that there's Leo Laporte.
In stripy socks.
Oh, I've got hearts on mine.
My mama made these. I thought I'd wear them. You know, I was back east. That's why I look such a cowboy. I was back east.
The Eastern Cowboys.
Easter. I was back east. I remember
panning talking, for gold.
I remember talking to a cowboy in California. He said, "Those aren't Eastern. Those aren't Westerns. They're Easterns. It all happened east of us."
Yeah, that's Easterns. True.
Anyway, I was in the east in Rhode Island. Had a nice dinner with Andy Anatko, by the way.
Oh, good. I'm glad you got to see Andy.
And I was visiting with my mom, who's in the old age home. And she's just doing great.
Good, good.
And she made these socks. And so I'm wearing them in honor of my mama.
Well, they are very
nice. It was a
nice
visit. It was a very nice visit.
Good. Yep.
And I brought back a leather cowboy hat. No, I didn't. I have this. This is local. This is a Western.
Local made.
Well, do you see this problem the parents are having now?
Oh, the parents, they're going, we need to...
Wall Street Journal.
Be in touch with our kids.
Schools want to ban phones. It's a problem in schools. Kids TikToking, YouTubing in class. So they're trying to ban them in schools, and the parents say, no, we want to know where our kids are at all times.
Does this not make you go, you know, I didn't. My parents didn't know where I was at all times.
But now, but see, once you get that.
Once you have it, it's hard to let it go.
In Brush, Colorado, says the Wall Street Journal, teachers and administrators settled on a compromise for the 2022-23 school year. Students could keep their phones, but they have to be out of sight.
Okay.
Which is fair. To reach their parents, they need teacher's permission, and they have to go to the office to use the phone. If a student's busted phone confiscated, parents need to pick it up. But parents didn't even like that. Several parents transferred their kids out of the school, saying, no, I want my kids. I don't know what they
are
wanted.
Are they texting them during the day?
I guess so.
That's odd to me.
I guess so. But I understand also how parents feel where they want to keep.
Well, and to be fair, you know, you've got lots of school shootings. You've got all, you know, all the stuff that goes on. I understand wanting to be able to be in touch if you need to be, but I don't know that
parents are worried
necessary.
About their kids in school. That's part of that's a little bit of a problem because I don't think kids are free range anymore.
Right.
Because we parents are so worried about our kids. Oh, hi. Good to see you. This is the show where you answer tech questions.
Oh.
I probably should have mentioned that at 888. Get those phone calls coming in.
We just got right into
724. I made a song for us. Did you hear that song?
Yeah. We listened to like four of them last week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It all blends together.
It all blends together.
It's all in the past. You got to say goodbye.
But that number was in the song, which is good. ATG at twit.tv or Zoom us.
You can Zoom. Call.twit.tv.
And we will take your questions, Mom, but we like to start off slow.
Slow burn.
Really get you into the show. Ease you into the show. Yeah. By talking about some of the week's news. So that's my story. What you got? Do you have anything? I got another
story. No. There's another story that we should talk about. It's big. And you actually, I know, did lock it into your links, which is that there's potentially some precedent being set when it comes to what is considered testimony versus what is not.
Oh, yeah,
and
this is big.
Biometrics.
Yeah, we've kind of thought this would be the case. So the issue is, can a police officer say, give me your thumb, buddy, and push it on your phone and unlock your phone? Or hold it up to you, unlock it, and then look at your phone. Can they do that?
Can they do it? Because, of course, we have a right to not incriminate ourselves. And so that is where the disagreement happens. Is putting my fingerprint down or looking at the phone potentially incriminating myself? And it was interesting that it was based on cognition. I thought that was a fascinating sort of crux of the argument. Does it count as cognitive? Is it cognitive to actually take your fingerprint and put it on the phone to sort of unlock what's in your brain, which is where the right to not incriminate yourself right. is protected?
This is kind of what courts have ruled in the past as well. There's kind of standing precedent. The police can't come into your home and say, unlock that safe, brother. You can't get you to do what's in your mind. They don't have legal access to the contents of your mind. They can't force you to do that. But they could take a hair for DNA, mm-hmm. right? They could take a thumbprint, right? So the judge, and I think probably correctly ruled, but it's good for us to know this.
That's the thing. Know the implication there, because that could mean that you would have to hand over that. Now, this is the time where I tell you, with an iPhone, if you press and hold all three buttons, the volume up, volume down, and the side button all at once, it turns your phone into, it locks your phone in such a way that Face ID or Touch ID doesn't work, and you actually have to type in your passcode. And apparently, as it stands, passcode does require cognition and therefore is more protected as things stand in a way that you would not be required to incriminate yourself.
It's interesting. This is a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals judgment. And in their ruling, they said, to date, neither the Supreme Court nor any of our sister circuits have addressed whether the compelled use of a biometric to unlock an electronic device is testimonial. That's the debate over whether you're testifying against yourself or if it's just passively giving a fingerprint or a hair. The panel said, yeah, it's not testimonial. It's just like taking a fingerprint. You can be forced to use your thumb. So this is really important. Have a good password on your mm-hmm. phone. You could actually turn off Face ID or thumbprint, but I think it's so convenient people don't want to turn that off. But know that gesture that Mike had just mentioned, to force your phone to go into the mode where you have to give it a password. And then, in theory,
yeah, exactly.
They can't say, son, what's your password? And you could say, well, the United States Constitution, Fifth Amendment says I don't have to give that to you, sir. And now, depending on how adamant they are, because what they, you know, you could be at the border and they could say, well, okay, you just rest cool your heels there in airport jail for a while.
Yeah.
We'll see what
who
you
will
what
break
you
first.
Say. Right.
Game of chicken.
I think it's probably, if you're crossing the border, good idea not to have anything incriminating on any of your electronics.
I think that's a good bit of advice.
Maybe don't have anything incriminating on any of your electronics ever.
At all. Ever.
What a thought.
Huh.
What a thought.
I'll have to keep that in mind.
There's an idea. We've actually talked about this over the years because there hasn't been a definitive judgment. But I think the general consensus is anything you have in your mind, like a password, is protected. Mm-hmm. That's your private property. And they can't compel you to reveal that. So that's good news. The other thing, kind of related, is that the FISA spy program has been reauthorized, and Senator and President Biden has signed that into law. That was the renewal of Section 702. Now, there were quite a few amendments to this that added some features. In fact, there was some concern that it extends the FISA to cover more than it used to. Mm. Senator Ron Wyden and Josh Hawley introduced an amendment that would have taken language out. This is a little tricky, but I'll explain it. There's language in the bill that expands the definition of an electronic communications service provider, which would normally be Twitter, Facebook, your Verizon, to anyone who has access to equipment that is being used or may be used to transmit or store wire electronic communications. In other words,
anybody with a device that can communicate.
Yeah, or your apartment landlord.
Yeah.
Because they can get into the basement. There's that device. There's all sorts of, it extends it quite.
Can you read that again? Anyone
who has access to equipment being used to transmit or store electronic communications.
I have access to a router, so I you should also be included in that, right?
You're
included in that.
You are.
That's basically everybody.
So they introduced this amendment to say, Ron Wyden, who's very smart, introduced this, but it failed.
Oh, good.
No.
No?
They were trying to block that. That's in the bill. That's in the law.
Oh, it failed.
Now.
The block was failed.
It failed to block it.
Dang it.
Rand Paul and Dick Durbin introduced amendments imposing warrant requirements on surveilling Americans. Failed. Failed.
Okay.
So it's passed, and it gives the law enforcement this vast power to surveil us, which they've had. They've had ever since 9/11.
This
is the Patriot
Act. Enshrining it, right?
Yeah. Well, it's just renewing. It has to be renewed on a regular basis. It has been renewed. Another thing in there, they stuck in there in the appropriations for Ukraine and Israel.
Mm-hmm.
They stuck in a little thing about killing the old TikTok, snuck that in. And now, see, remember, the Senate was blocking it. It already passed the House once. The Senate was blocking it. But now it's thought, because it's part of this funding bill, it's probably going to go through the Senate. It looks pretty bad for TikTok right now, which frosts my leather chaps.
Amen.
I'm
still not convinced that there's, and I've read a lot on this at this point, and I'm still not convinced that there's any ground to the need to divest. It's just, I know some very compelling people have made very good arguments for why it needs to be the case, but I don't know. I don't know. Where do you stand on it right now?
Well, here's my problem. So I'll acknowledge, and Brianna will argued quite, I think, persuasively on Twitter a few weeks ago, that there is a threat to our national security that the Chinese government effectively controls TikTok. It's not owned by the Chinese government. They have a stake in it, but also because it operates out of China, the Chinese government can go in anytime and get whatever information TikTok has. So there's two concerns. One, that TikTok could be used to spy on Americans. And the second, that it could be used to propagandize our youth, making them think that communism is okay or something like that. So the first one I'll dismiss out of hand, because every program you have on your phone is doing the same thing. And they're collecting that data and they're giving it to data brokers who then sell that data to China. China doesn't need TikTok to spy on us.
Right.
China has many avenues. And unless you're willing to be much more sweeping in your privacy protections, China's going to go, fine, take it. We don't care. Now, there is a legitimate concern perhaps that TikTok might be used to propagandize us. Although we know, for instance, Chinese and Russian operatives have full reign on Twitter.
Yes.
And are constantly posting propaganda there. There's also a Chinese TV broadcast on your cable, CCTV, Chinese Communist Party television, just like there's a Russian television, RT,
right?
On your cable. So they're allowed to broadcast in the United States their propaganda. I think the concern is that TikTok is so compelling, the youth love it so much, that perhaps it might be more powerful. Maybe it is. But the argument on the other side is that so many people have used TikTok to launch a creative careers, to reach out to. I mean, it's an incredible medium for young people in this country and actually all over the world. And you're taking that away from them. And by the way, the beneficiary of all this is Meta.
Right.
Whose Instagram will immediately take all of that. My son, who's a big TikTok chef star, has 2.5 million followers on TikTok. He's on Instagram. He has 1.5 million, but he was smart. He knew, he saw this coming. So he made sure that he had a second channel.
And Google will scoop up the leftovers with YouTube, the shorts, YouTube shorts.
They're trying. Everybody, LinkedIn has TikTok feeds.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that TikTok, well, we can, you know. So, I think, honestly, those media can also be used to propagandize American youth. Certainly being used to propagandize American youth into buying more sneakers or whatever it is.
Right.
So I feel like this is a little bit picking on TikTok because it's Chinese.
Because it's the outsider.
It's anti-Chinese. It's the outsider. Without really addressing a very real issue of privacy and propaganda. Those things are going to continue with or without TikTok. So I'm a little disappointed because I think it does take away a voice for a lot of people, especially young Americans who have used TikTok, my son included, to make their fame and fortune. And, you know, he makes a living thanks to the success that TikTok gave him. But it's not just my son. It's millions of others, right? Some really amazing people have come out of TikTok. Dancers, singers, creatives, Lil Nas X, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take my ride on Old Town Road. That whole story was started on TikTok, I think, where he went out, he bought a $50 rhythm track,
yeah,
and he recorded Old Town Road, and he became a superstar thanks to TikTok. So if I were Taylor Swift, I'd be hopping mad. That's all I can say. Anyway, there you go. That's the news across the nation.
Beautiful.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Ask the Tech Guy.
Oh. Who's coming up on the show today, Mr. Anthony Nielsen? I think it was Sam.
No, well, Chris was going to.
Chris is taking the day off. Yeah. He's going to be back. His fiber went down. The backhoe cut.
You really need Metamucil, yeah.
Yeah, too much fiber. Not good for your internet
access. But we do have Rod Pyle at the top of the hour.
Mr. Spaceman. Rod Pyle coming up in half
Spaceman.
An hour. And we should mention that means you get another week.
Yes.
Take your brilliant picture.
Yes,
of
yes,
what,
yes.
Power?
I think it is. I will tell
you. Tell us? Because I wasn't here that
just
week.
A moment.
So I don't know.
Chris,
I was in Mexico.
Marquardt said.
Yeah.
It is TG. Yeah, yeah. It's powerful. Powerful.
Powerful.
And so you can
powerful.
Use TG powerful and TG powerful AI if you do the AI version of the assignment. Of course,
this
those
is
go.
Be, this wait, picture should I, that I'm doing right now is TG powerful AF.
There you go. I did it. Powerful AF. Is that one of the ones I can submit as well? No. So take the picture, tag it TG powerful, or if you're using AI to make it or modify it, TG powerful AI, upload it to Flickr, get it into that tech guy group before the end of the week. And then Chris is going to pick some shots and I'm going to submit this powerful AF shot to the group. Now, Anthony Nielsen.
Yes, sir.
Filling in for John Ashley. Would you?
We could take a break,
somebody?
Or do you want to?
Well, we'll take a little break. That's okay.
Just a little break.
Take a little tiny break. You know, this is the 19th anniversary of TWiT this week.
I know.
Wednesday was the 19th birthday of This Week in Tech.
That is a
very
whole
proud of that.
Human being.
So we have a lot. That's a whole human. A full-grown human. So we have a bunch of people, I think more than two dozen people coming to the studio later today to watch a all-live TWiT. You're going to be on it.
I am.
Jason Howell
Jason
makes his triumphant
Howell.
Return. He can promote his new Techsploder channel on YouTube. And Abrar Al-Hidi will all be in studio, plus 20 carefully washed members of our audience to celebrate of our club, to celebrate our 19th anniversary as a podcast network. April 17th, 2005 was the first TWiT. So that's, I'm looking forward to that.
Me too.
Our show today brought to you by the wonderful folks at Wix Studio. They gave me 1 minute. I can't believe this. 1 minute to tell you about Wix Studio, the web platform for agencies and enterprises. So here are a few things you can do from start to finish in a minute or less on Studio. Adapt your designs for every device with responsive AI. Expand Wix Studio's pre-made solutions with back-end and front-end APIs. Generate code and troubleshoot bugs with a built-in AI code assistant. Switch up the styling of hundreds of web pages. That means fonts, layouts, colors, all in a click. Add no-code animations and gradient backgrounds right there in the editor. Start a design library, package your code and UI in reusable, full-stack apps. Oh, and one more big one. Deliver everything your client needs in one smooth handover. My time is up, but the list keeps on going. You got to check it out. I tell you what, every time I go there, I am blown away by how beautiful these sites look. Each one a perfect snowflake, unique, one of a kind. Step into Wix Studio. See for yourself. Go to wix.com/studio, wix.com/studio. We'll put a link in the show notes so you can click that link and find out more. Or on our sponsors page, twit.tv/sponsors. Thank you, Wix Studio, for supporting Ask Them Thar Tech Guys. Should we change the name to Them
Thar
Tech Guys?
I like Them Thar Tech Guys.
I like this hat. It gives me a personality I lack otherwise. Maybe not a good personality, but it does. It's something. I feel like I'm in Yosemite.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. It is your turn now, Mr. Anthony Nielsen, to pick some wonderful
person. Let's go with a caller from Texas.
Oh, that's perfect.
Howdy.
Caller from Texas. What's your first name?
It's John.
Hi, John. And what whereabouts in Texas? Because that's a big state.
Central.
I don't know where that is. Where's that?
It's Central Texas.
Central.
Like the middle of the state.
Oh, Central. I thought you meant the town of Central.
Or Centralia.
What can we do for you?
It could be a town, but I don't know.
It could be. It could be.
Well, I'm just curious. I am a advocate for VPNs, and given the discussion you had with surveillance, mass surveillance, by various organizations, including outside the U.S., not want to name any actors or any of that, but how do you know a VPN or similar service or protocol is actually at work, like protecting your privacy?
That's a really good question. So as an anecdote, I'm on the plane flying home from visiting my mom, and they have internet on the plane, and I can't for the life of me get on it. I can't get on it. It just won't work. And I asked the flight attendant. She says, well, just keep trying. It'll probably work. It's working for everybody else, she says. Then the seatmate says, oh, you have a VPN turned on? I said, yeah, to protect myself. He says, it won't work with a VPN turned on.
What?
Well, okay. So that's a good example of how you know it's working. If it won't let you on. And the people who are running the service obviously monetize the free Wi-Fi by spying on you, right? By collecting information. Because if it won't work with a VPN, there's a good reason for that. So, but how do you know that your VPN's working? You don't. How do you know that if you're using, I was using actually Open or Next DNS, which I use on everything, which is kind of, it's not exactly a VPN. It just becomes your DNS provider and can block stuff like advertisements and so forth. But it can also block malware. That they didn't like that either. So, but mostly it's trust. And this is the problem in the modern world. We're all interdependent. And there's a certain amount of trust that is basically required in a civilized society. When I drive down the road, I'm trusting that the person coming in the other direction isn't going to suddenly decide that he wants to use my lane instead of his. And there's a certain amount of we're both traveling with 2-ton vehicles at 60 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of trust that goes in just to driving down the road. There's a lot of trust that goes into almost everything we do because we're so interconnected, right? I have to trust the manufacturer of my C-cell sweater did not, in fact, use cow patties to make it or whatever, right? There's just trust. So there's a certain amount of trust that goes into the security software you use. Now, because unless you are ready to run Nmap and a packet sniffer and really check and see, and even then, you can't really, you can validate that it's kind of doing what it's doing. For instance, sending all your traffic to their server. But once it gets to their server, it's off your device. We don't know what the VPN server is doing. It could be making a careful note and sending it to the NSA. There's even, you know, for years been conspiracies that Microsoft has a backdoor for the NSA. I don't know if they do or don't. There's really no way to know. There's really no way to know. It's one of the reasons I always recommend if you're going to use crypto software for encryption, that kind of thing, that you use open source software. And there is one little trick that I think is really important that real hardcore privacy advocates and paranoiacs use. It's something called reproducible builds. If you've got a program that's open source, let's say your Messenger program or your VPN software, or your encryption software. It's open source. Normally, people will just download the compiled blob, right? And say, well, I'm, you know, it's open source. I'm sure it's the same. But that's not really the trick. If you really want to make sure, there's a lot of effort on your part, that it's secure, you look at the source code. You make sure there's no backdoors. There's nothing you don't understand. Everything makes sense. And then instead of downloading the pre-compiled blob, you compile it yourself locally. It's a reproducible build that will, in theory, give you the same result as the binary blob. Now, here's an interesting point. There's a company called Signal that we all trust, Signal Messenger. You know, Steve Gibson, our security guy, says, oh, yeah, that's the gold standard. Moxie Marlin Spike, I love him and trust him. But for some reason, even though they are open source and they offer open source, they don't make it reproducible builds. You cannot build Signal and run it as a build. You have to use their blob. Mm-hmm. For hardcore people, and John, I suspect you might be one of those, that's a non-starter. Because, well, I don't know what's in that blob. That may have an extra little bit of code that's not in the open source code. So if you really say, look, no, I am not going to use anything that I can't look at, you're going to use an open source version of Linux that has no blobs, no pre-compiled proprietary stuff. You're going to compile it all yourself with something like Gentoo or one of the...
Or Arch.
Or, yeah, exactly. You might want to use Tails, which is Desire Cubes. These are all designed to be highly secure. Compile it yourself from scratch. Don't use anybody's binaries. But then you also have the expertise. You need to have the expertise to look at the source code and really know what's going on. You don't have to understand it word for word, but you have to be able to find anything that doesn't make sense or is sending code out somewhere that you don't know about. That would be the only way to do it. And honestly, for 99.999% of everybody, it's just not going to happen. We're going to have to trust. And then you just have to vet the company. You have to see what other people say about the company. I trust Signal. I don't think Signal's got any shenanigans going on. But honestly, the lack of reproducible builds is a red flag. That's not good. So you want open source with reproducible builds. That's the only way to be sure.
Yeah, I feel like that's the main obstacle to getting that digital equivalent of Harry Potter's cloak of invisibility.
Right.
If you know what I mean.
Yep.
Are you the caller who asked about purchasing multiple laptops?
Maybe, but
yeah, I remembered that.
A lot of security questions.
Yeah, no, it was a fun question that we got to answer. I remember not too long ago.
Yeah, that was wild, right? Oh, wait a minute, I take it back. I lied. Signal does now have reproducible builds for Android, at least. So that's very, very good news. They've been doing Signal for Android. Now, I don't know why other Signals don't, versions of Signal, but if you're going to be using Android anyway. In fact, you're not going to be using Google Android. You're going to be using, you know, an Android you compiled yourself.
Yeah.
On a Fairphone or something like that.
Graphene.
Yeah, Graphene. Graphene's good. I like Graphene. But again, you're still using it pre-compiled, I bet you. I don't think you're – are you building it yourself?
Well, I got to learn how to, like, compile it myself.
Right. You know what? It's a lot of work. Worst case, you're going to learn a lot about how technology, how computers work, about coding and all that stuff. And you're going to help protect your privacy a little bit. The thing about open source is most of us just assume that somebody is looking at the code because we don't have the skills to look at it. I mean, I could look at it. I don't have the time.
Yeah.
I could probably verify everything if I really wanted to. I'd spend the rest of my life looking at source code and compiling it.
But see, this is where I bring up Douglas Adams, because in that book, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I distinctly remember conversations surrounding the other people's problem paradox, which is that we say, oh, that's somebody else will worry about that. And then that person also says, oh, somebody else will worry about that. And then someone else says, oh, somebody else will worry about that. And then finally you have the person who is a Linux volunteer who discovers a millisecond lag in SSH and discovers a backdoor. Thank goodness. But that's because we all spend our time thinking it's somebody else's problem to worry about and not verifying.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess what I'm saying in the end is if you, John from somewhere in Texas, was it John, want to really know whether it's working, yeah, you got to do you got to take the time to
do a lot of labor. A lot of labor. John, I thank you for the call. I'm wearing the Texas hat just in your honor there. And I really respect
you. I
think it was sarcasm. I really respect your desire to verify, you know, trust. What's that saying? Trust, but verify.
Trust.
That was Ronald Reagan saying about the nuclear arms in the Soviet Union. Trust, but verify.
I thought it was trust no one.
Yeah, that's Steve Gibson.
Yeah, that's
Steve Gibson. If you and he calls it TNO, and if you really want to do TNO,
you're going to have to somehow make another 24 hours appear in your life magically.
I mean, by the way, Steve does not open source his program.
Yeah, so you,
have to trust him if you're going to use SpinRite, right? Maybe someday when he retires, he'll open source it. But that's the thing. If you really, really, really don't trust anybody, you got to compile your own open source software from scratch. And you got to review all the code that you're compiling. A lot of work, but it is doable. It's possible. I just think in this modern world, there's so much trust. We have to have so much trust that, you know, the people who make our Twinkies aren't putting, you know, something awful in this filling. We just have to trust that, you know. And we live in a world of trust. And honestly, trust isn't so bad. Trust is a good thing. You can maybe go a little overboard in paranoia. I think
I agree.
Trust a little bit. It's hey, thank you, John. I appreciate it.
Little trust goes a long way.
Yeah, little trust goes a long way. Thank you, John. Appreciate it. That's one of the reasons I think people should learn how to code. Even if you don't really compile all your own software, it's good to learn that.
Arch
Linux,
a bit
you
about
do
it.
That. Tails Cube, he was using Arch. All of those allow you. In fact, Arch has a big whole section on reproducible builds that they talk about what's reproducible and what you shouldn't use. Anyway, that's a fun question. How do you know that you're safe? You don't.
You really don't.
If the only way to really be private and safe is to move to a cabin in the woods, chop your own wood for heat. I don't know how you get your water. Put out rain catches for the water. Don't, whatever you do, get on the internet.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, when it comes to VPNs, having a nation state do an audit, a raid and an audit of your VPN, as happened with ExpressVPN, tends to be very helpful.
Yeah.
A sponsor of the network, we should mention.
Yeah. We love ExpressVPN. That happened in Turkey. They were looking for a murder suspect, and they just took the servers. They didn't knock. They just came in and said, give us those servers. Stop. Keep your hands up. Off the keyboard.
Don't press any buttons.
Don't press any buttons. We're taking the servers. There was nothing on
nothing
them.
Nothing on them.
They couldn't do anything with it. So that's a good sign. If you're really paranoid, the Turkish government was in cahoots.
Ooh.
See, that?
Trust
see,
no one, Leo.
Yeah. I mean, this is the problem. It's turtles all the way down. It's
untrustworthy turtles. Look at the way they look at you. Just untrustworthy.
Let's do another one. That was fun.
Oh, and by the way, if you have a question, remember that you need to look towards the bottom of your UI, the user interface, for a little hand. You want to click that hand and raise it to let us know you have a question.
Like lonely elderly man. I don't know. Should we take lonely elderly man? That sounds like...
I think we'll go to the phone call, right?
Let's do the phone call.
Do we have another phone call?
Yeah, I see a phone. Unless that's a fake.
John. Oh, see, now I've got me paranoid. Yeah. And I don't know who to trust.
We're going to voicemail.
Should I trust you? Oh, we trust that because we pre-listened to it. Go ahead.
Hi, Leo and Micah. It's Erica from Tucson.
Hello.
A couple of weeks ago, you were talking about the NFC chips and using them to log on to a Wi-Fi. I've gone through the process and have chips that work with my iPhone. But it seems that the Wi-Fi application doesn't work. I can read the chip and see the information there, but the iPhone doesn't actually go to a Wi-Fi login. Looking at Google, I'm seeing a lot of entries indicating that while this works well on Android, it's not yet enabled on the iPhone. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering if I'm missing something or if that feature indeed is not available on the iPhone.
If you had listened carefully, You would have heard Micah say it doesn't work on the iPhone.
Yes. So unfortunately, that is something that was available at one point briefly in a beta and then was no longer available again.
Apple's concerned about security.
Apple says it's concerned about security. Some would argue it is simply locking down the NFC as much as possible. But I think there is some, you know, trust no one. There is some semblance to understanding that, yeah, if I tapped my phone and it automatically connected me to a Wi-Fi network that was then gobbling up a bunch of my information and I didn't realize it, that is kind of troublesome. But again, there's an argument made for both sides.
In other words,
it doesn't work.
This is why we recommended, and we talked about using QR codes. See, mm-hmm. I have a QR code on my camera. I use, these are ping tags, but after I showed the ping tags, remember I put them on everything, my keys, my phone, my cameras, somebody pointed out that Tile is also now doing that. Tile makes those Bluetooth trackers, and they now have introduced the same idea. I haven't tried it, so I don't know if it works exactly the same as the ping tags. I've been very happy with a ping tag, pingtag.com, but Tile now has, something that they call, they call them stickers. Not the most complicated.
Are they NFC?
Oh no, this is not it. No, they have QR codes.
Got it.
Where are they? Maybe they stopped doing it. Somebody emailed me and said, you know, Tile does these QR codes too. You know, the stickers are NFCs.
Oh yeah, Tile lost and found labels.
Lost and found labels. Yes. So I'll have to do some investigation to see if this is the same as a ping tag. You buy a 3-pack of labels for $15. The idea is, now this is for lost and found, you scan it, but we put up, we've got people come in the studio, mm-hmm. we put up a QR code, big QR code on the front door. As you come in, says scan this to join our Wi-Fi. And that works on iPhone and Android and everywhere else. So instead of an NFC tag, which honestly, I think most people are now more used to QR codes than they are NFC tags. Instead of an NFC tag, I would just put up a QR code, or, you know, get a little label. It doesn't have to be like this Tile lost and found. It could just be you make it yourself. There are quite a few open source QR code makers online. And there are also some non-open source that are, you know, I would actually prefer going with somebody who's doing it open source, because sometimes they'll send it through a server or whatever and they can do some monitoring. So, but Adobe offers a free online QR code generator. I see quite a few online, but I would maybe look for one that's open source. I found one that's written in Python that nice. I can run locally. Then I know nobody's getting, talk about paranoid, then I know nobody's getting any of that information that I'm making in the QR code. It's called QR code. Good name. 7.4.2.
Does what it says on the tin. I love that.
Does what it says on the tin. It's on PyPy, which is the Python library. So you just do a pip install QR code, and now you can make QR codes. You have to have Python installed on your machine, but almost all machines, it's easy to install Python. So that's nice because you're doing it locally. You generate a QR code. You could print it on an Avery label. You could... Don't say anything.
Don't make any sudden movement.
I think there's an alien in our TV. You could print on a sticker. You could put it up, as we do, a sheet of paper up on the wall. Yeah. I think, you know, that's probably the easiest thing to do. If you are running Airbnb, or you let your house out, or you have friends staying with you for the weekend, just put a little sticker on the table or whatever, and everybody now knows that you scan them, because every restaurant during COVID did their menus that way.
All that way.
So, I've used this QR code in Python, and because it's open source, I can look at the code. I can know it's not sending anything to the home office. It's just generating a QR code.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's my suggestion. And yes, you are right. Apple doesn't allow it. Like we said, that's okay. I don't listen either. Half the time, Micah says something and I repeat it. Right?
And then the other half, I am worried I'm going to repeat something that you say so that I just don't say it.
We're busy doing our own thing here.
You know, we got what we're splitting the work. We've got one brain cell to share between the two of us.
Exactly. Rod Pyle is coming up in just a little bit, but I think we can do, should I do an email or you want to do a call? What do you want to do?
Let's do a break.
a break.
To a break. What a novel thought. You're watching Ask the Tech Guys. That there is Micah Sargent. I am Leo Laporte. Thank you for joining us. Did you see the latest?
I almost ordered one. I know you're getting one. Yes. I'm glad because once again, see, this is what I love about you, Leo, is that you get to be the person who tries things before I do so I can decide if I want to spend my money on them.
The day that Kobo announced a color e-reader with pen, like that morning, Micah texts me, can you buy that so we can look at it? I said, I already did.
You already had bought
already
it.
Did. I already got great. It. It's on its way. It comes at the end of the month. You didn't text me this, but you probably didn't have to.
No, because I actually heard you moments afterwards say on, I think it was MacBreak Weekly at the time or even Windows Weekly. I don't remember. But you said moments after I learned about it, I ordered this and I thought, okay, good. We're good.
Well, I know the guy who does the marketing, Stammy. He's an old friend. And I feel like this is probably going to be very interesting. The idea is it's a little pin you wear that records everything. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't record people without their permission. If it uses voice print identification. So if I'm sitting talking to you and it doesn't know who you are, I have to explicitly say, hey, Micah, can I record this conversation? And if you say yes, it adds Micah and the voice print, and it will record you.
I was wondering about the consent aspect.
Yeah, that's cool. Really clever. The thing that we know about AI is it's really good at making transcriptions of voice, right? And it's also good at taking those transcriptions and summarizing them, perhaps doing action items, that kind of thing. Or if you're a husband and wife, solving a fight. It's that instant replay thing, right?
Okay.
You want it now, don't you?
This is going to solve, but also break a bunch of relationships because no one will be able to gaslight anyone anymore. That's fantastic.
Honey, you said.
You did say
this,
honey.
Let's check the instant replay. Oh, you're right. I did say.
I've got receipts.
So this comes in August or late August, but it got me thinking. I've got an Apple Watch. It has a very good microphone on it. Mm-hmm. It has, I have Just Press Record or voice memos, a variety of apps. In fact, I have Just Press Record on here, which when I press it, immediately starts recording. And it then sends it to iCloud and transcribes it. So I'm halfway there already. And I don't have to ask your permission, which
That's
is illegal.
True.
But I don't have to ask your permission. So I'm recording right now. See, it says it's recording. So
wait, but have you been recording this whole day?
Maybe.
You have to tell me if you're a cop, otherwise it's entrapment.
No, I just started. So
I just have to speak to this. There's a new show on Netflix called Baby Reindeer, and I won't get into it because people should watch it, but it's about stalking. And,
oh, dear.
Who knew how recording could play a role in, could have an impact there.
Well, get ready because this is going to be a difficult thing to enforce and it's going to be universal. There's already a company that sells a credit card size device that you put up on lectures or whatever does exactly this. It records it, transcribes it, sends it to an AI for summary, and then you get the information back. Mm-hmm. I have to say though, there is that privacy concern.
Yeah.
But used it, I think thoughtfully, how useful is that?
See, because this is the thing. I do not like the idea of committing to things and then forgetting about those commitments,
exactly.
Whether they're small or big, whether, they could be anything. I really want to be a person of my word. And so to, accidentally let that lapse, I love the idea of saying, okay, I can go back and I said I would do this and I said I would do that. And what was that conversation I was having? And also just, here's the thing. I have thoughts all the time that I could just say out loud and suddenly that's being dictated back and I would be able to look at that later and go, right, I did have that great idea. I think it's going to be very cool. I honestly will probably, even before you get this, I'll probably end up getting one just because but that is the thing for me, Leo, is I do have a little bit of concern about
there's a huge privacy concern.
Yeah, and I don't know if I quite feel comfortable wearing this around other people without full and true transparency. And
well, you
that
need a hat
difficult.
That has a sign that says I'm recording.
I'm recording this.
I don't know if that would count legally, but it certainly would be a notice. Everything is. And I think honestly, look, we're already in that situation where Every school, this is a problem in schools. The kids have smartphones. Every fight,
every little thing is
recorded. You know, my kids grew up with relative privacy, but this generation can pretty much assume that there is somebody with a camera that could be recording everything they do when they're in public.
Yeah.
And I think that we're going to rapidly get to that in the next few years, where we just assume that audio is being recorded at all times.
Yeah, because it's already the case that we don't have there's not really a reasonable right to privacy in public anyway. There's kind of an agreed upon right to privacy in public. But if you are out and about and you're in public, there's only so much true protection that you have as an individual outside of just kind of somebody's comfort level. That's why people can, you know, take video and photos and stuff like that out in public versus if you're at a private event, that kind of thing where they do have to get your consent, et cetera, et cetera. So
the other thing I should mention, you know, I was, as I mentioned, visiting my mom. She has Alzheimer's. And what that really means for her, she's very happy. She's 91. She has no physical ailments at all. She remembers everything that used to happen. She's unable to make new memories. Mm-hmm. And that's actually an interesting concept. Christopher Nolan's done a lot of that with Memento, remember, and other of his movies. The idea, what if you couldn't remember anything from moment to moment? And, you know, that's why she has to be in an assisted living facility, because people take care of her because she can't remember. Did I eat? Have I bathed? What time of day is it? She can't remember. But what's interesting is she's 100% there. One of the things we do with her is show her old pictures and look at picture books. She remembers every detail much more than I do. So her memory is great for things that happened before she got Alzheimer's, before she was unable to make memories. Mm-hmm. But now that she can't make short-term memories, nothing gets into the long-term memory, or very little does. And so it's kind of every day's a fresh day. But imagine if she had a device recording and she had notes that she could refer to.
Yes.
She could have an artificial memory, in effect.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, this augmented memory. And I was also thinking of this. How cool is this? You have someone you're taking care of. They go to the doctor on their own. But now you can look through that and see what the doctor actually said.
That's a very good use.
That would be amazing.
In fact, every time I go to the doctor from now on,
yes,
I'm going to say, can I record this?
Because yes,
that would, you want to remember all those details. And it's hard to, you know, especially when he's telling you bad news. So I think that this is going to be more and more prevalent. We know this is something AI is very good at, is taking this text, transcribing it, assigning voices to it, and then analyzing it. And I imagine you'll have custom prompts. So you could say, look, Micah will say, anytime I agree to do something, please make a note of that. Yep. Add it to my to-do list. Maybe Rosemary could write a script that would take record. So I'm halfway there. Uh-huh. I got a ability to record. It goes to iCloud, which means it's also available on my Mac. And it's transcribed. This actually, Just Press Record does a very good job of transcribing. So what I'd like to do is get the transcripts to ChatGPT or to some other AI for analysis.
Yeah, through an API. Which
could you probably, have you heard of make.com? I think you could probably build something.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I know you can because I have friends who do this. I told you the story.
Yeah, I think Doc Rock actually does something like
this. So you may not need the limitless pin. Yeah. Because you really probably could do it all with a Apple Watch.
But it's so slick, that
and it's a visible pin, and it has a light on it when it's recording, and
it feels more.
It's a little honest. More alerts people that I am recording this, and I can and it won't record unless you ask permission.
And so everybody will stay away from me, which is great.
Yeah, which is also okay. All right, time to talk space with our spaceman. Rod Pyle is here. He's the host of This Week in Space, along with Tarek Malik of space.com. Rod is the editor-in-chief of the official publication of the something society.
You want me to finish?
Yeah, yes. Would you please?
It's Ad Astra for the National Space Society, our fine quarterly magazine.
Love it. Author many, many books. And he's on his way to, I don't know, are you on your way to Alpha Centauri these days?
Zeta Reticuli for this trip, because that's how far I would have to go to actually win an argument with my significant other with a recording. And if you think that Lisa's going to let you get away with that, I just don't think so, but that's just me.
I love the smoothies they have at Zeta Reticuli.
They're the best.
There's no better.
And then there's a restaurant at the end of the universe, which is true. There's nothing like it.
You know, I tried to wear a hat today in celebration of you, but it went out of camera, so it wasn't very interesting okay. looking.
Now, I want to know, Rod, given the look at that, a top hat. Given the speed with which those stars are moving, can you tell me what the speed of travel you're at? Probably multiple times the speed of light, I'm guessing.
I think it's warp glorp.
Warp glorp.
Warp glorp.
Yeah, that's as technical as I can get. You know me, I'm not Mr. Technical.
We're meeting for Thursday, next Thursday, for the Stacey's Book Club, and I forgot how much I love this book. We're reading Dennis Taylor's incredible We Are Legion, the first book in the Babaverse series. Have you read any of those?
No, I started, I guess it was that first book, and I had some trouble with it.
So you lost interest.
But I will go back. Well, it happens. You know,
one of the things I liked about it, it's a lot about AI. It's not a spoiler because this happens in the first chapter. The guy dies and they cut off his head because he paid for it ahead of time.
Right. He paid to have his head cut off?
Be frozen after his death.
Yeah,
like Walt Disney. And then he wakes up 117 years later and they've taken his head and they've turned it into an AI. So he's in a machine. He's actually an AI. But what he becomes is a von Neumann probe. And this is a fascinating concept. The idea is you could explore the universe with AI-driven probes that had built in the ability to reproduce themselves using 3D printers. So when they arrive at a planet, the first thing they do is gather resources, build some copies, send them off, and they can slowly multiply and spread throughout the universe. And it's a wonderful concept, and that's why the book is called We Are Legion and why he is in the Babaverse, because there are many Bobs by the time we get to the end of the book. It's a wonderful book. If you have read it or you want to read it and join us Thursday for Stacey's Book Club, and we will talk a little bit about it. So you didn't like
That's for club members, right?
Yeah, club members. Well, you're a club member. Yeah. You can
yeah, but I just you know, put the ad out there for everybody else to make sure they join.
Club members, join the club. Yep.
We can still have a club.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll get back to it. As I recall, it was kind of an interruption.
You should read it. I think it's quite amusing. I think it's really fun and funny. It's in this kind of the vein of The Martian, maybe because Ray Porter's reading it. It's a great Audible book. Ray Porter does all the voices, including one of the Bobs who's decided they all have to have different names to avoid confusion. One of the Bobs has named himself after Homer Simpson and talks like this. It's really funny. It's very good in an audio book. Anyway, what's going on
in space?
In space.
You mentioned probes beyond the solar system, and we have a little bit of additional information about Voyager 1.
Voyager.
Yeah, so let's just set the backstory. Voyager 1 was launched in 1977, so that's 46-ish years ago. It's currently 15 billion miles away from Earth. One-way radio messages take 22 and a half hours to get out there. So it's you know, it's out on the extreme edge of human presence for sure. And Voyager 1 was the one that flew past Jupiter, Saturn, and Saturn's moon Titan, and then was ejected out of the solar system to the north of the ecliptic, whereas Voyager 2 continued going out to the outer planets. So in December last year, it started sending back gibberish. JPL pings it every now and then to say, how are you doing? And it sent back a bunch of code that didn't make any sense. And they went, uh-oh. So they looked for a carrier tone, which it sends, and so they can instruct the carrier tone to modulate itself to let us know that it still heard us, but the data it was sending was bad. So about 2 weeks ago, they announced that they think they figured out it's corrupted memory in a single chip in a flight computer. It's worth bearing in mind, you know, if you have a chip way out there in the radiation-saturated outer solar system where you've got a lot more cosmic rays than you do in the inner solar system, and they have big, heavy energetic particles, one of those particles can come flying through your chip and flip a bit or two and you've got problems. So their estimate is there's like a 3% corruption somewhere. Oh, Anthony, bless you for pulling those up. I was going to send them to you, but you did it already. And that's the problem. So they think they could do a workaround, but it'll take a couple of months. However, at this point, over half of its instruments are shut down anyway. And while, you know, we anthropomorphize these things, we love the Voyagers, they're the leading edge of human presence, as I said, but the RTGs on them, the nuclear power supplies, are probably good for another 3 to 4 years. They're barely sending back enough wattage to track now. So we may be looking at a few more years before they got to be shut down.
Part of the reason we love them is because they've kind of exceeded their mission, right?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, it's like all this stuff that JPL does. Well, we'll give you a warranty for 3 years. Or in the case of Opportunity Rover, that was supposed to last 90 days, and it lasted 14 years. So JPL does spectacular stuff, which is why it was kind of a shock earlier this week. NASA held a press conference about this much-beleaguered Mars sample return mission and basically said, and I'm paraphrasing greatly, but basically said, JPL, you're too expensive.
That's too slow. So frustrating. This drives me
talk
nuts.
To industry. Well, and you know, the problem is if you're
the samples
you're
are collected,
field center,
they're there, they're sitting on Mars waiting for a mission.
And we knew this was going to happen because this mission wasn't approved before they you know, set up how they're going to do this. And it's what's infuriating is, you know, the way the setup works, if you want to get a budget through NASA and pass Congress, you either have to deliberately bid low and then have it go up, or be honest and have your mission not approved. So it was bid originally a lot cheaper. Costs have gone up, of course. And, you know, can private industry do it? I don't know. They haven't even been able to land successfully on the moon yet. So it seems like going to Mars and grabbing rocks is going to be a far stretch. The other problem is, at this point, you know, JPL is flying out the remainder of the life of the Mars rovers and orbiters. They've got a Venus mission and they've got Europa Clipper and a couple other smaller things, but that's about it. So if they don't continue feeding that field center work, you start losing the brain trust and you lose all these brilliant people.
There's a wonderful,
it feels like they're being strangled,
documentary about the team. Now, remember, Voyager was launched in 1972. And the team that launched Voyager is still running it, but they're all our age, Rod. They're all...
And older. Well, so that's Ed Stone. So he's probably in his mid-80s. He's still the...
Yeah, that picture of him was back in 72. Yeah, here we go. Now we're getting there.
Yeah.
So,
and it's a real small crew.
It is. It's a handful of people. It's a wonderful documentary because it's just in a little, they have a little storefront in Pasadena or somewhere that used to be a dentist's office. It's just a handful of them, but they're running this longest, this is the farthest a human craft has ever gone away from Earth. They're running this mission. They're just a handful of them left. It's a wonderful, it's called It's Quieter in the Twilight. And it's available on your streaming. Came out a couple of years ago. Wonderful story. And actually, during that story, one of the first crises hits Voyager 1, and they have to shut down some features because their batteries aren't keeping enough power going. It's a really beautiful story.
Not to get carried away, but the interesting thing to me about the RTGs, so these are radioisotopic generators, and they have a plug of plutonium in there that's got a half-life of 87 years, but it's surrounded by thermocouples. And over time, you know, these bimetal things, over time, they apparently start growing little hairs towards each other and they get small shorts, these get micro shorts. And that's what ends up causing them to not last, you know, the full span of time.
But you said they were only supposed to last 7 years and they've lasted quite a few more. Yes.
The probes. Yeah. That was the original estimate. Anyway.
Here is one of the shots from It's Quieter in the Twilight. Voyager mission critical hardware, please do not touch.
And that was, so they moved away from that old dentist's office and brought it back up to JPL.
Oh, did they? Oh, good.
But it's still, it's like, you know, 12 people or 10 people and a banquet table and a couple of old, I think they're Sun workstations.
Oh, yeah, because,
you know, from this,
it's all from that era. It's amazing, though, what they're doing.
They know how to use that software. Oh, it is.
They're able to communicate with this. How long, What is the lag? What is the latency? How far out? It's billions of miles out.
2.5 hours each way.
Wow.
So it's 45 hours round trip to get a command out there. And and let's not forget, you know, their data recorder is a tape recorder. It's not a drive. It's not a disc.
It's 1972 technology. So it's like
my Commodore VIC-20, you know, with its little tape drive or something.
Oh, man.
So it's, you know, just the fact that they're still working out there. And it's a hostile environment, you know. They're just amazing machines. And if you ever get a chance to do even the small tour of JPL, which is where they, it's kind of a hassle to get in, but they take you into the main auditorium. But they've got probably, I don't know, 15 spacecraft in there hanging from the ceiling on the walls. They've got a Voyager engineering twin there, and they're huge.
If I go down and I say I know Rod Pyle, if I don't wear this hat, will they let me in?
No, they'll call security on me.
I want to do that. I know you used to work there. You used to do a PR for them, right?
I did PR, and then I did this yearly technology highlights book that was really great.
Oh, that's fun. Right. Yeah.
It was 30 stories of their coolest stuff, but you know, the cutbacks came, and that's a soft sure. project, so that was the easy one to get rid of.
Yeah.
But I still got a few copies of the old one, but I'm hoping it'll come back. You know, it's just NASA's operating under this dumb continuing resolution that makes funding uncertain, and you know. And just one more small thing. I don't know if a lot of people know this, but JPL is the only NASA field center that isn't staffed by civil servants. NASA pays Caltech to manage JPL. So they're Caltech employees, which is a whole different structure. And for better or worse, that makes them easier to dismiss than if they're civil servants. So I think that's why we see so many cutbacks happening there. So that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, I know we have some JPL scientists who listen to our shows. I've talked to them in the past, and of course, we appreciate what they do and what you do, Ron. Ron, what's his name?
Ron Pyle.
Ron Pyle.
That's because Rod has already landed on the other planet. We're talking to the evil twin, Ron.
Ron. Well, and Pyle.
You know, all I do is go up there and listen to the smart people and try and write down what they say so the rest of us can understand it. But you're right. I mean, it's a real incredible environment up there. And I think because the Caltech connection, it's a little more of a college campus feel, but working with those people is just such a pleasure. And it really took a bite out of my heart when they had those cutbacks. And I'm sure, you know, everybody there too.
This Week in Space, every week, now open to the public. We started it in the club and it was such a success. It's available internet wide. Just search for This Week in Space in your podcast client, or visit twit.tv/TWIS for all the episodes. Thank you, Rod. It's always
thank
nice.
You, sir. And you're rocking that hat. I want to see one on Micah next week.
I'll get him one. Actually, this is from the American hat maker as opposed to somebody else. So
it's a very handsome hat.
I think it's not. Lisa got it.
It is a very handsome hat.
Yeah, Lisa got it for me.
That's kind of like Stetson quality, right? I mean, it's the real thing. It's not.
I don't know if it's the real thing. It's certainly made out of leather. That's the real thing.
That's a sweat catcher.
Exactly. Thank you,
all right,
Rod.
Gentlemen.
Thank you, Rod.
Thank you so much.
I could wear this in space probably if I had the right face mask.
And tell your brother Ron we said hello.
Now you know why I ordered that AI pin. Yeah,
exactly.
And if you know why, could you tell me? Because I forgot.
Yeah, I'll let you know when it's coming.
You're watching Ask the Tech Guys. 888-724-2884 is the phone number.
Yep.
You can leave a message if you call in when we're not on the air. Otherwise, if you call between, 2 and 5 p.m. Eastern on Sundays, we're here and we'll answer.
We'll answer.
Who should we talk to next, Mr. Nielsen?
Let's take a breather, then we got a wireless caller on the line.
A wireless caller coming up as Ask the Tech Guys continues. This is Mike over there. I'm Leo Laporte. I got hat hair. It's the only thing I love hats.
That's why I don't like
But I don't hats. Like hat hair.
Yeah.
Is there a solution for that? Is there a hat that doesn't give you hat hair?
That somebody should make it, because that's a hat I'd wear.
I buy that hat.
I basically have a choice between wearing a hat or not wearing a hat. There is no wearing a hat and then later not doing it.
That's why many of the people who wear hats don't have hair. There you go.
There you
That's
go.
The explanation.
That's the solution.
Welcome back to Ask the Tech Guys. Let's see. Who's next? A wireless caller.
Hello.
Hey, hello. Welcome. What's your first name?
This is Dan from Fresno.
Hi, Dan. Welcome. What's up?
Thanks, man. Well, I have a question about a wireless hotspot using an iPhone 15 Pro Max. I'm not at home. I'm at a friend's house because I'm having work done on my house.
Okay.
But she doesn't have any kind of internet here. So I'm trying to use my hotspot with my computer. I have Xfinity Mobile, and I've had them since October. But when I connect, it lets me connect and everything. I can connect. But once I do anything, like say I check my email, mm-hmm. it immediately disconnects me.
That's useful.
Well, exactly. It's so weird because if I look at my phone so at that point, I can still stream. It's not like I don't have internet. I can still stream stuff.
Oh, really? So you can receive, but you can't. You're thinking you can't send, but the truth is you can't receive without sending. It's kind of like the natural law.
Right.
So we know you're sending. If you're able to stream anything, you're sending.
Right. So I can get on the internet, like I said, on the computer. I can do something, and immediately drops the connection. If I go into my system tray and look for the internet connection, it says there's no internet connection.
So what is it that causes the internet connection to drop? What actual activities cause it to drop? You can look at YouTube.
It seems as if if I stop doing something, then it goes away. Like if I check my email, it connects and everything, I get it. But right after that, if I go to try and load a web page, it tells me there's no internet.
So it lasts for a moment and then it stops.
Right.
And you said you're using Xfinity. Now, let me ask you a question about Xfinity. One of the ways Xfinity works, it's very frustrating to me, is if you're an Xfinity customer and you're using the Xfinity router on your internet, is they actually create an open hotspot. It's called Xfinity.
I hate that thing.
I know, that people can use. And unless you turn it off, you're helping other people. Now that's fine. They say it doesn't cost you any money. It doesn't take away bits from your downloads and so forth. But the wireless works that way. So they do fall back to Verizon. But if you're within a hotspot, if that phone can see an Xfinity hotspot, it says, I'm not going to use Verizon because it costs them when you use Verizon. I'm going to use that hotspot.
Oh, let me tell you this. Let me tell you this too. So say I try using just the Xfinity Mobile, the cellular data to get the hotspot.
Right.
It does the same thing. Okay. So where I'm at right now, the neighbor has one of these open hotspots.
Aha.
So if I lean right up against my neighbor's wall, right up against the wall, I can get their Xfinity hotspot. Right.
Right.
But it does the same thing. If I connect to the internet on the computer, as soon as I do something right after that, it drops.
Do they? I don't know this about Xfinity. Do they charge you extra for hotspotting, or do they say hotspotting is part of your plan?
It's part of my plan. It's part of the Unlimited Plus plan that I have.
Okay. So
I
it says
like 15 gigs of hotspot.
Okay, good. Okay.
This is bizarre to me that it disconnects right afterward. Is it just this one computer? Have you tried it with your neighbor? I can't remember if you're at your neighbor's or your friend's house. Have you tried another device to hotspot with? And is it?
I haven't. I don't have another device here.
Okay.
Because
we've had this.
That's the only problem I have.
This is a Windows machine, right?
Yes.
So I remember a similar issue with a Windows PC where it ended up being an energy saver issue.
Yeah.
That the Wi-Fi card kept dropping right after
it will do something. That sometimes you have to go into the device manager and turn off sleep on the network cards.
Oh, and here's the other thing
on the network card.
Yeah, I know that Windows has a feature where it can recognize when it's using something like a mobile connection, and it will automatically do what's called metering.
Yeah, it's called a meter connection.
Because it thinks that, oh dear, you might use too much, and so we're going to protect it. So that might actually be what's happening here, is you run that email thing once, and it's running up against the meter, and so then it's disconnecting right after that. So you might check in your, that's the thing about Windows, is we don't know necessarily which Wi-Fi card you have, et cetera, but you might look around in your network settings to see if there's something that is marking it as a metered connection, and then turn off that metered connection. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, by default, Windows sets Wi-Fi to non-metered.
Oh, it does.
But mobile broadband networks, by default, it sets to metered.
Oh, yeah, so there you go, yeah.
So what you probably want to do is turn off metered. So here's how. Swipe in from the right edge of the screen. Select Settings. Change PC Settings. Choose Network. Select Connections. And then under Data Usage, turn on or off Set as Metered Connection. So that's ridiculous.
I know. It's so involved.
It could be that. It also could be Xfinity is weird.
Is I'm kicking you for some reason.
I'm gonna.
The one time that I did get it, the one time I did get it to actually last for a while, mm-hmm. what I actually ended up having to do was load a YouTube video, you know, like a playlist.
And keep it running.
And at that point, it kept it running.
Do you have low power mode turned on your iPhone?
No.
Okay.
That's interesting.
That
so in other words, something. By keeping something running in the background, and this is on the phone or on the, Windows?
Yeah, on the phone or on the Windows PC?
On the Windows machine.
Okay.
On the Windows machine.
So this may be is what you were talking about with where the card is for some reason going to sleep. Mm-hmm. And keeping the YouTube running is constantly pushing the card. So the network says, oh, no, you're still working. Mm-hmm.
It's very strange.
Dang thing here.
It's incredibly frustrating because I'd go to do something and I just had no more internet. And I have to restart everything to get it go back up and going again.
You're not using a VPN, are you?
No.
Okay.
No.
It's in the network and internet settings. Are Windows 10 or Windows 11?
11.
Okay, that's what I'm using here. Let me go to the internet option. Look how small that is. I can't even read that. Oh, my.
Yeah, why is it so tiny? That is also a good question. So you do something, and then you wait a couple of seconds. In the network settings, are you still connected to the network, and it just says that there's no longer internet connection, or does it completely disconnect from the network as a whole?
So when I go to System Tray, when it's working, it says connected to Daniel's iPhone internet. You know, that's where. But when it loses it, it just says no internet.
Okay, so see, it says no internet. That it could still be connected, mm-hmm. but just not have internet. The reason why I'm asking is because that can help us narrow down if it's coming from the Windows side or the iPhone side. If it completely loses connection entirely, then that's more likely to be on the iPhone side, but it sounds like this is definitely on the Windows PC side.
I don't think it's the iPhone because I went as far as connecting the USB cable to the computer, mm-hmm. and connecting the internet that way. You know, not using the
wireless
because
option,
on the iPhone it actually says you can do it wired.
Yep, USB
so
tethering.
I tried doing it that way, thinking, yeah. But I thought, well, maybe that'll remove any possibility that there's a problem with the iPhone because it's going through the cable now. It's not going through mm-hmm. what other, chip that's on the iPhone. It's going through the cable.
Yeah.
But it still did it.
Yeah, it's a great troubleshooting step. So props on that, on attempting. This is a real thinker.
I have to say my experience I'm an Xfinity customer, much to my sadness. I am not an Xfinity wireless customer, but I have to say one of the things I find is that many of those Xfinity Wi-Fi hotspots that I wander around are unreliable. And I'm thinking that maybe this is part of the problem is that neighbor's Xfinity hotspot, the phone, as soon as it sees it, says, oh, forget Verizon. I've got a Wi-Fi hotspot mm-hmm. and joins it. I wouldn't get closer to it. I would get farther from it because
but it's a weird thing that it doesn't either way, though, even if it's
doesn't
on
either
5G
way.
Or...
Yeah, because I think that my experience is when I'm wandering about, I make sure I do not join any Xfinity Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Because always bad. It's not that it's bad, you know.
I've gone as far as turning off Wi-Fi.
And it still happens.
You know, so it doesn't try and join anything, and it still happens.
So you're on Verizon for sure. Now I'm a little bit puzzled. I would look at this metered connection thing.
Yeah, definitely check
that.
Here
it is in the network and internet settings. I'm on Ethernet, so it's under Ethernet. But for you, it would be under Wi-Fi. But you'll see there's metered connection, And you want to make sure that that's off.
This is where I wish that we had AI bot where I could ask it the whole history of Ask the Tech Guys, because I remember an episode where we were talking to someone and we found out that one specific Wi-Fi card was just a bad card. Right. Do you remember what that was?
Yeah, it was the killer card.
Card,
yeah. From, I think it's Intel. Yeah, they were on a Dell system that had a killer. So you don't need an AI. You just need my cowboy
memory.
Hat brain. yeah, the killer cards are bad, but could be that. I would. That's the other thing, and I would go into the device settings on that network card and make sure sleep is turned off. That's for sure. You know how to get to the device manager?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to go and look at that particular internet card. And, you know, I'm on a virtual machine, so I won't actually have a hardware internet card here. So let me just see. Network adapters. Yeah, it's all virtualized. So I can't really. But you'll go into device manager, network adapters. You'll choose that Wi-Fi adapter. You'll go to properties, and you'll see somewhere in here that there is the ability to sleep. Turn that off. You don't want to sleep. You want that thing to always be on. That's a common issue for a lot of Windows users. And after that, I don't know. I don't know. I honestly want to blame everybody. I hate Xfinity. Want to blame them. Not a fan of Windows. Want to blame Windows.
The one who makes the card. Want to blame them.
Could be the iPhone for all I know. This is such a complicated setup.
That's what I wasn't sure.
It's so weird that it works and then it drops.
Yeah.
Works then it drops.
Mm-hmm.
And email, you mentioned, you know, email, that can be a relatively heavy bit of data grabbing. That's what made me think metered connection, because, yeah, when you hit that refresh button, depending on your email program, it might be pulling a lot of information and sending it back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only thing was that, like I said, it did stay on when I loaded up that YouTube playlist. It stayed connected. So that's why I was thinking something was going to sleep or something weird like that.
Yeah, this is a great article. Thank you, Quippy, from a site that I'm going to bookmark from now on called Rotten Wi-Fi. Why does Xfinity Wi-Fi hotspot keep disconnecting? And in this case, it is because he's connect. You cannot see my computer. Is that the problem? No. Oh, yeah. The cable fell out.
Well, I got
the little cable fell out. Apparently, in this case, it's because of this public Wi-Fi network called Xfinity Wi-Fi that I was talking about. And there's a limit on how much you can use. So it's apparently very common to have connectivity problems when you're on an Xfinity hotspot. So, yeah, the neighbor's Wi-Fi is definitely something you don't want. There are some other things you can troubleshoot in here that are kind of interesting. I will put a link to this in the show notes too. Thank you, Quippy, for this. And I like the name of this site. I'm gonna start haunting this rotten Wi-Fi site.
rotten
Wi-Fi.
You know what really grinds my gears? Yeah, rotten Wi-Fi.
Yeah, we don't have a good solution for you.
Turning off the hotspot.
Yeah.
Was the first thing, you know, at home, I always turned that off.
Yeah, you don't like it
and
either.
And a couple of times, they've actually turned it back on me. And the only reason I noticed is because, and I noticed because my phone tries to connect to it.
Right, and they want it because that's what's...
I know nobody else.
The whole idea that Xfinity had, now other cable companies are copying, is, hey, we got a lot of routers in town. We could be a mobile network if we just had enough routers open their Wi-Fi to the public, then we could be a cellular company. They realized, of course, that wasn't going to work as soon as you got out of town, so they made a deal with Verizon. But they still don't want to use that Verizon. It costs them money. They want to use their hotspots. And it's just a terrible solution. I do not recommend a cable internet company as your mobile phone company. I just don't think that technology is very mature. It works very well. It was a way of making money, which Xfinity is very good at.
Let me ask you this. What do you guys think about Frontier Fiber? They just recently came into here where I live.
I would do it. Well, Frontier has a very checkered past.
I mean, I've heard such bad things about Frontier. Yeah.
But I have heard good things about Frontier Fiber. So the history of Frontier is terrible. And they moved into Southern California and they just messed with people like crazy. And Cory Doctorow has raged at them because they basically took government money to build out their network and never did, and on and on and on. But I hear very good things about Frontier Wi-Fi from a number of customers. So I mean, Frontier Fiber. In fact, there's Scooter X saying Frontier Fiber is amazing. So I think I would put the history in the back mirror and say maybe rearview mirror and say maybe I'll give them a chance with the fiber. Everybody I know who has it likes it. There you go. So give that a try.
They recently laid a bunch of fiber here in town.
I think when you can get fiber, you should get fiber. Lisa and I are looking for
stock and
downsize our house. We're looking at smaller houses around town and over in Sonoma. First thing I do,
amen,
type in, can I get Sonic here? First thing I do. You know, she has other priorities. But for me, high speed internet at a low cost is a great deal. Yeah.
Agreed.
I think fiber is really, if you can get it, is really the way to go. Thank you for the call. Okay. I'm sorry we weren't much help, but we gave you some ideas. We gave you some things to try. And keep listening because somebody might call in with some a better idea because we got a lot of – that's the best thing about this show. It always has been.
It's a community.
When I started doing it 20 years ago, it's a community. We've always had great people in the chat room who help out, listeners who call in. It's not just us, the tech guys, answering your questions. It's this vast community of tech enthusiasts. All trying to answer. Yes, Scooter X says Frontier Fiber is amazing. Very happy customer in Southern California. It's been rock solid since I installed it a year and a half ago. The price is fair and it just works. Is this the same Scooter X?
I know.
Is this a different Scooter X?
Seems awfully.
He's very positive.
Yeah. Awfully non grumpy.
Yeah.
No, we love you, Scooter X.
Let's move on. Oh, April 24th. Chocolate Milk Mini Sip said this along. April 24th. Is it April 24th yet? No. Day after tomorrow is JS Naked Day.
Okay. Can we explain what that means?
Obviously, the web JavaScript should work without JavaScript.
Got it.
JS Naked Day promotes the rule of least power. Start with HTML and CSS, and then stop before you get to JavaScript. You know how few sites work without JavaScript?
Very few sites.
Very few sites work without JavaScript. But it is JS Naked Day.
JavaScript is like what? The earrings and cufflinks to an outfit?
Yeah, which is fun. It's more like suspenders.
Okay.
Like it, you could probably get along without it, but many of us, our pants would fall down.
There you go. I like it.
Yeah.
What you're here for, the metaphors
keep coming,
the reminiscing.
Now the Discord chat is saying, no way, that's Scooter X. We have fun. We have real fun in the Discord chat. That's just one of the facilities, the things we provide you as members of the club. We have all those club events coming up today. We're gonna have a live recording for club members. Stacy's Book Club is Thursday. And of course, you record iOS Today in the club every Tuesday. And we're going to do that watch party. Are we still, Anthony's idea here, we're doing this May 9th. We're still doing Metropolis?
Yeah.
We think the soundtrack is copyright.
Yeah, because it was restored recently. Not recently, but relatively.
We'll
recently.
Show a crappy old 1927 print.
Yeah, but that's missing like half an hour.
We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
You and I will act out the last half hour.
AI create the last half.
Wouldn't that be funny?
Yeah.
Watch this hour and a half incomplete movie and provide us with the last half hour. I think that's a great idea. Anyway, it's going to be a watch along. We're going to do it. Lisa and I are going to do it at the house where much of the staff's going to join us. I'll be making brisket. And you can join us in the Club Twit Discord.
Sadly, no brisket in the Discord, but
I haven't figured out a way to do that yet. I'll show you brisket.
We'll show you the brisket.
But I can't give it to you to eat.
What is that, mukbang?
Mukbang?
Mukbang. Not bung.
Mukbang,
I thought it was like ong, but maybe it is bang.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's people just watch eating. People eat.
Yeah.
Oh, that's disgusting. Anyway, I don't.
Hey, don't yuck people's yum.
Don't yuck people's muck bung.
You keep saying bung, and it's not bung. I'm telling you, it's definitely not that.
You said it.
We're unclear.
Anyway,
don't Google it, guys.
The reason we do that is we want to make it fun to be in the club, and I think it is fun to be in the club. You get ad-free versions of all the shows. You get video of all the shows that we don't make video publicly available. For instance, Micah does this wonderful hands-on Macintosh show. And for a long time, it was behind the paywall in the club only. We realized that's terrible. We want everybody to have access to it. So we thought, what could we do? And Lisa said, why don't we just put the audio out to the public? People can listen to it, get the value of it. But if they want the video, they have to join the club. So we want to give you some sort of reason to join the club. Now, it's only $7 a month, which I think is a pretty low. You know, there are many podcasts, the whole podcast, one podcast, $7 a month. We give you a bunch of podcasts, access to the Discord, ad-free versions of all the shows, Twit Plus content that we don't put out anywhere else. But the main reason you should be doing this, by the way, the main point of this, yeah, I'll bake biscuits. If you'll join the club, I'll bake biscuits. You can mukbang my biscuits. Anyway, the main reason you join the club is because for some crazy reason, you think Mike and I should just keep doing what we're doing. Not just this show, but all the shows. You want to keep Jammer B employed and Anthony Nielsen employed and Benito and Sebastian and Debbie and all the people who work here. You want to keep the lights on. You want to keep the studio going. But we can't do that without your help because, unfortunately, sad to say, ad revenue is dwindling. Audiences are dwindling. It's a very competitive environment. And we're just, you know, we're giving it to you and saying, you want us to keep doing it. It's up to you. So twit.tv/clubtwit. If you listen to more than one show a week, I think $7 is a very fair bargain. And it really does help us keep doing what we're doing. And I don't know about you, but I've recently come to the opinion that tech, which was getting kind of monotonous over the last few years, the iPhone just so dominant and everybody's just copying them and it didn't seem like any really real innovation was happening. All of a sudden, AI happens and everybody's waking up and things are happening. And I think it's going to be a very interesting next few years. And I really think it's important that we're here to give you unbiased coverage with no axe to grind. No faith or no favor. We're giving you the straight facts, and I think it's worth $7 a month so that we don't have any fear or favor, we just say tell it like it is, and I think that's going to be very valuable. I think
without fear or favor.
Yes, that's us. Mukbang, it's called.
Yeah, but I think the A is
mukbang. It's or it's Korean, of course, and it's pronounced. Okay.
There you go. That's it.
It's an eating show, an online audiovisual broadcast. See, I'm not a fan of that.
I wouldn't watch it, but
love watching other people eat.
And they eat. They
what's the term? There is a term for a phobia of eating sounds. Oh, yes.
Or any mouth sounds. What is that?
I don't know, but
if you didn't ask me, I would know it.
I know that there are many people who hate me because of that, my mouth sounds.
Gosh darn it. The fear of God was put into me as a child with that, so
Don't smack your lips closed. And chew with your mouth closed, as you should.
Yes, amen. We're watching misophonia.
Misophonia.
We were watching a show recently, and it was a reality show, and they purposely made the mouth sounds of the people
disgusting
louder. Ugh.
Yes. And for people who have that sensitivity, it's sometimes called sound rage.
Yeah, because it will make them angry.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It doesn't make me angry, but I just think it's gross.
There are people, because I used to, you know, I'd bite an apple while I was on the radio, and people get very upset.
So you bit harder.
Yeah, I bit harder. Let's move on to... That was our little break. Thank you for putting up with that. And thank you for joining Club Twit to all of our Twit Club members. I really appreciate it.
Fernando on the line?
Fernando
on the line.
Yes. Hi. Oh, look, there he is. He's in the Stargate.
Hello.
Hi, Fernando. Hello. Where are you calling from?
San Diego, California.
Beautiful. Is it weather gorgeous today?
It's a little overcast, but it's bad.
We got
it's
your weather. It's 75 degrees and clear. It was a beautiful day yesterday for the butter and eggs day in Petaluma.
Heart healthy.
Good for the heart. What can we do for you, sir?
Well, let's start with that. For those people that don't like the mouse sounds. I've been listening to you talk about Dot as the AI that you're using locally.
Yes.
Or the LLM. And I work for a local hospital and we support their EMR. And of course, they don't like their stuff public, right?
Right.
They always want it local. So I like to set up a local and a library for our support, but it's really difficult. I was trying to do it with Notebook LM, but that's public.
And because it ends up, everything ends up going to Google. So even if you have local content, Google gets the stuff. And probably HIPAA prevents you from doing that, I would guess.
Well, it isn't patient information, but it's just
But you're still sensitive to it.
You know, folks that call in and are having issues and we need to fix.
So let me tell you what you're looking for, which is something called RAG. And this is so there's two things actually you're looking for. So RAG, which is retrieval augmented generation, is an AI term, which means the AI is retrieving local documents to augment its AI. Mm-hmm. Retrieval augmented generation. The other thing I think you're looking for is a completely local AI, which means so this is Dot, by the way. You can see this is one of many open source AI choices that's out there. I downloaded this one because I'm playing with this, okay? The idea is with Dot, you're going to, let me go to the settings here, if it has any. I don't know where do I find the settings? There's going to be a way to choose the model. You're going to download a model locally. Now, I would suggest, so all of these, there are two ways you can operate. It needs at some point the base large language model or LLM. Mm-hmm. And that is the thing that teaches it how to talk, basically. So you're going to either, and so ChatGPT is an LLM, so is Claude from Anthropic, so is Google's Gemini. Those are all large language models that are have general abilities. But in every case, you take a large language model and you tune it for your use case. And the tuning is really what differentiates these LLMs. But you need an LLM. LLMs are costly to generate. They're big. They take a lot of time. They take a lot of GPU or NPU power. That's why the big boys have their own models, these LLMs. But there are a handful of models that are available for you to use free, to download for free. In fact, Facebook Meta just released the latest version of their open source model, Llama, L-L-A-M-A. Get it?
Llama 3, right?
Yeah. They just released it. And the idea is they're going to do all the work to generate it. They're going to, you know, use all the electricity and to generate this in the big server farms. But then you can download the LLM and use it on your machine. And then you fine tune it using retrieval augmented generation with your own documents. There are other ones. The other one that's very good is called Mistral. It's from a French company that has recently received a lot of venture capital. But also, Mistral is a downloadable LLM. So the idea of these is instead of going to OpenAI or Gemini or Claude, where you go out on the internet and use their LLM, even with your own documents, which is how Google LM, Notebook LM works. You give it your documents, but it's still using Gemini, right? It's still going up to the cloud, tuning Gemini and getting your answer. You can run these on modern machines, especially on Macs, because they have built-in machine language processors, but also the new Windows machines with NPUs. There's one Intel chip that has an NPU. They'll be a little faster, but you can use your GPU for it. So they could take the LLM, apply your documents. I'll show you. So I, the first thing I did was with ChatGPT, and I created a couple of ChatGPT calls them GPTs. One for the language, the programming language I use, Common Lisp, and one for Emacs, the editor I use. So what I did, in fact, if I go to the configuration, you'll see how this works. What I did is I took an LLM, and the LLM is online. So I am going to what is probably the best LLM out there, which is OpenAI's LLM. And then I added to it these documents. Furthermore, I told the LLM, only give me an answer that comes from those documents. So, in fact, I can ask it questions, and it will say, you know what? I don't have any of that information in my documents. It also has a checkbox that will allow web browsing. And that you, it, so that is also going to be going out to the public internet. So this was my first experiment. It works really well, but it is sending data, the questions that I ask, out to the server and coming back with the information. So it, but it's generating brilliant stuff. Now, this is an interesting question I asked it. I asked it to create a polynomial function using the Lagrange interpolation formula. It said, "This the documents you provided, these methods are not directly detailed in the documents you provided." So it warned me, look, I'm going to do stuff that is not from the tuning that you gave me. But it still went out, looked up on the internet, the Lagrange polynomial, and even wrote Lisp code for me.
Nice.
That I could execute. So it combined the two. It actually did something that I thought was remarkable. Now, I agree with you. There's several reasons you don't want to do this. Besides privacy, you also have to pay ChatGPT or Claude for API access. And it's slower because you're sharing their big processor with a lot of other people. So in theory, here's Dot. With Dot, I have downloaded, I think I downloaded Mistral. Actually, it comes with Mistral 7B. So it's a very nice LLM. And then you upload a folder. So I can upload all the Lisp documents. It churns on it for a while.
And upload doesn't mean to the cloud. In this
yes,
case.
That's correct. So upload's probably not the best term. It's actually just adding, using
like
RAG.
Ingest.
It's adding this these documents to its tuning, its data, its LLM.
Can I ask a question, Leo?
Sure.
Can that folder be shared? So my bigger vision is everybody loads .ai on their workstation, right? Because I have a team of 10 that...
it could be on a network share, yes.
Yeah.
In fact, you could tell Dot where you want to store where you want it to store its information, and it will then put it there, and that could be a network share. Okay. Now, I've just been playing with this. It seems like first of all, uploading documents takes a while. It's got to chew all of those, right? There is, I'm sure, a theoretical limit on what it's doing is turning those provided documents into tokens, which the LLM uses. And there's a limit on the number of tokens an LLM can handle. You perhaps have seen that, with newer LLMs saying, oh, now with 500,000 tokens. So there are limited, it depends how much you want to upload to it. This is not a solution you probably would want to use yet. It also seems to forget it each time, and I have to reload them each time. You can see it's still chewing on this folder that I provided to it. There are other ones out there, though. There's one called Jan. Let me launch Jan. Jan also allows you to choose. You can see here I'm choosing which model I want to use. And there are a variety of different models you can choose from. I'm using Mistral Instruct. You can use the API for OpenAI or Claude, but you can also use local ones. This requires a little more effort to do RAG. And that's been my experience with a lot of these. Adding PDFs or documents to the corpus is non-trivial. You have to use Python to do it. So this is another one, Jan. This is all local. So the beauty of this is it's a local LLM. I have yet to find the equivalent of what I did with OpenAI and ChatGPT. That's what I'm really looking for, is something right. That I can do just as you want to. Take an LLM, that's the large language model, that somebody else has created, download it now so I'm not sending anything up to the cloud, and then add my own tuning and corpus of data to it and say to it, hey, you can please use your LLM superpowers, but only give me answers that come from this corpus of material. That's how you keep it from giving you, you know,
hallucinations.
Yeah, I'm trying to find a better word than hallucination because it's such a human word. But yeah, it's to keep it from hallucinating. Keep it from making up stuff.
Right.
And in my experience, by the way, is that doing what I did with the OpenAI ChatGPT, saying just get information from these documents, has been 100% reliable. It has not made up anything.
Nice.
And you saw it warned me when it said, well, look, that's not in your corpus, but I do happen to know how to do a Lagrange polynomial. So here's how you do it. But it warned me ahead of time. So I think we're really close here. Now you see Dot has now absorbed all these documents. I gave it a whole folder and it seems to have absorbed a lot of stuff.
I've been playing with Notebook LLM, and the only problem is it only allows you 20 sources.
Yes, so, and ChatGPT is the same, and I think that's that tokening tokenization thing. I'm not sure what the limit is on Mistral, which I think this is what is using Mistral, but it seems to be quite. You can see all these documents I've loaded in there, quite a few. Now, by the way, this is incredibly slow.
Yeah.
So the benefit of having it local, which I thought would be speed, is not. So the idea of Dot was to make RAG easy. It's still got a ways to go. There you go. I asked it for some sample code to do a while loop in Lisp. Lisp famously lacks one. And it was able to come up with some examples and give me some code. But it was slow. So it's getting this from the documents I gave it. It wouldn't know this otherwise, I don't think.
Sounds good.
We're getting close, but I don't think we're there yet to answer your question. I gave you a very long, winded answer to your very simple question, which is you want RAG. You want as many tokens as possible. There will be a limit on the number of tokens. You will choose an LLM, and there are a variety like Llama and Mistral to choose from. There are many more than that. So you should try different ones. And yes, in most cases, I think what you're going to have to do is your own Python thing. You can cobble this all together with Python, including the RAG part of it. The whole idea of Dot is so an idiot like me can just download it and do it. It's worth playing with. I don't know if I'm doing something wrong. Maybe there'll be a new version. It seems like I have to load this code all the time. I don't know why.
Well, it is in beta right now, right?
Yeah.
So
this is just, you know, it's somebody's hobby project. That's the thing. The idea of Dot was, you don't even have to choose what model. You don't have to download anything. It just it comes with it. And it has DocDot, which is what I'm using for documents for RAG, and BigDot, which is just the LLM by itself. All LLMs are tuned. You're going to tune it further with a corpus of data.
Right.
Did I help you at all?
Yeah. Just to be patient. Keep playing with it.
It's happening. It's happening. Before the by the end of the year, see, this is to me the real promise of AI. Something local that is working on your personal information.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So, because that could be, you know, that's why I thought this pin was interesting. Record every experience you have and then let the AI generate stuff. And you can ask it stuff like, hey, how do I get to that gas station that I visited the other day?
Yeah.
You know, you can ask it, query it about your life. That, to me, that's got to be just around the corner. We're so close, but we're not there yet.
And I think locally, you know, is the biggest key, right? Because there's so many issues with privacy and our data and everything like that. Yeah. And if you can have it local, I think people would like it more.
Well, this is why Microsoft made a big deal about announcing their AI PCs and why Qualcomm is building in these, they call them neural processing units, into their hardware. Because, yes, people want to do it locally. Yeah. People want her, you know. But I think ultimately, for most stuff, the connected AI is going to be better because it can go out and look on the internet for information.
It depends on if you're using it for search and new knowledge or if you are looking using it for RAG, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Ideally both, RAG. Right? I mean, if I should be able to cobble together something that knows everything I ever did and can get more information like directions from Google Maps, right? I like it if it can go out and get stuff. I just don't want it to exfiltrate my information, and that's a little tricky. Almost, yeah. The real problem all of these companies are facing right now is they've run out of material to build these LLMs with. So they're anxious to use your information to help their LLMs. They watch because they really need, they want your email, they want your Reddit posts, they want your tweets, they want everything because the LLMs to train these things are giant maws. They've already absorbed most of the internet. So now they've got to go into your pocket. Get some information there. That's really what's going on, I think. Mm. It's a fascinating subject. I'm excited. I think AIs could change the world soon, very soon, in very unexpected and interesting ways. It could also be bad for the world. You know, there will be consequences. It is disruptive. Hey, I'm glad you asked. Got me a chance to get up on my soapbox. I'll get down now.
Thanks, Leland. And Mike, I really appreciate your help.
Great to talk to
question.
You. Thank you. You're watching Ask the Tech Guys. Micah Sargent and Leo Laporte. More of your calls coming up, 888-724-2884. Don't get me started on AI.
Don't get me started.
You saw that, right? I lost control.
It's okay, though.
I'm
excited, see, too.
And I'm of the opinion that we should just forget ethics, morals, copyright. Give it everything.
Okay.
Give it everything.
I don't think the ethics and the morals part I agree with.
Give it everything.
The copyright part I do agree
with. Give it everything. Because the more it knows, the better the chance it's going to solve, cure cancer and invent fusion and put us on the moon and all the stuff that, you know, all that stuff it could do.
I'd love if it had access to the patented medications.
Yes. Created.
Yeah.
AI is only as good as the stuff that is put into it.
Yeah.
And as Sam Altman at OpenAI said, you don't want an AI that's only trained in the public domain because it won't know much.
Nor do you want an AI that's trained on what we are doing right now, creating with AI. Like, pretty soon, there's going to be a lot of AI stuff that AI is going to get trained
on. That's how you get bovine encephalitis.
That is, I read that.
I'll explain why I said that someday, but it's too disgusting to do it now. I'll explain it. So BCE was a big problem in the UK because cows are eating meal made out of cows.
Oh.
And so it was spreading.
Got it.
So you don't want AI to get
BCE, that's fair.
By eating itself. Well, it's always bad.
That was a good reference.
It's always bad to do that. Always.
Yeah, don't eat.
You need original material.
Mm-hmm.
Did you listen to Taylor Swift's new album?
No. I think there are two. Oh, you know who will have listened to the new album?
Who?
Abrar Al-Hidi. Yeah.
She'll be in soon. Who should we talk to next?
Dan? Somebody waiting on the Tim. Line. Tim?
Hello, Tim.
Hello, Tim. Well, we know your name. Where are you calling from?
Ooh, Tim's in the dark.
Coming to you from the 3Com Network, Netcam.
Oh, my God. Blast from the past. You have to hold a phone to your ear because you never could get audio working. Hey, that's great. You seem too young to have ever seen the screensavers.
Oh, no. It was back in, 1998.
That's right.
I was a junior in high school. Yeah.
Did you call in?
This is my first time.
Oh, welcome.
Well, welcome.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Louisville, Kentucky.
Love Louisville. We went out, I don't know if you remember, but Kate and I went to Louisville, one of our very first appearances. We went to the little cable company's offices there and signed autographs. It was an awesome experience.
Awesome.
Yeah. Way back when. That's probably 2000 or 1999, thereabouts.
Uh-huh.
What can we do for you?
The last time I ran into you, Leo, was the 2011 Macworld. Do you remember the Sleeve 360 iPad case? The one that you tethered? That was me.
That was you.
That was my iPad case.
I love it. Oh, that's awesome. Did you make it?
We manufactured it.
Are you still doing it?
With the product. No, we ended up selling it about a year and a half later. We just offloaded the IP, basically.
But I hope you made a little money. Everywhere. I hope you made a little money on it.
Yeah, I think we did okay.
Good. Congratulations. Good. Uh-huh. See, isn't that great?
Uh-huh.
This is the wearable. It was a wearable iPad case.
Correct. Yeah. You could tether it to your hand, rotate it 360 degrees. And now it's almost like ubiquitous. I see that on so many different cases.
So did you just have this idea and say, let's make it?
It was my buddy came home with the iPad when it first came out, and we had the idea, like the concept, within like 30 minutes.
Nice.
Of like after I had showed up there. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Well, I am so thrilled to see you again. And I'm so glad to hear that it ended well for you.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here is the Sleeve 360.
Oh, my gosh. Talk about another glass in the past. Oh, my goodness.
Don't go to sleeve360.com. Nobody's there. Nobody's home anymore. Here, see? She's got it.
Yeah, that was
But this was brilliant. I mean, really, seriously. Yeah, you see them everywhere now.
Uh-huh.
But you were the first to think of it.
My dentist has three of them.
Does he?
No.
Is that Steve right there? Yeah. No, that's some guy at a
restaurant. Was Carter. That's the other guy.
That's Carter.
Yep. You saw him too at the show.
That's so great.
I still think that 2011 Macworld was like one of the last great Macworlds.
It really was. And one of the things that happened at Macworld is it became an accessory show. Accessories for mostly iPhones, unfortunately. But it really became an accessory show. So that was a good place for you to be.
I want that thing right now.
I know. What can we do for you today? Nice to talk to you.
So my question today, it has to deal with payment methods when it comes to subscriptions on the iPhone.
Okay.
So I feel like I'm locked in with the single payment method. To pay for subscriptions through my phone.
And, you should move to the EU.
Yeah. Well, I just, I'm an architectural photographer, and then I also own a preschool.
Oh.
And so there are certain subscriptions that I want to pay for, but I have to use the same card when I do that, and it drives my accountant nuts.
Well, you can have multiple cards on here.
But can you use multiple cards for the app actual store. Subscriptions? Yeah, the app store.
You can't, can you? That's an interesting question.
You can, but it's something that you have to be very proactive about, because essentially what you would have to do in the settings for your Apple ID, there's a section that's marked payments, and you've probably seen the screen many times. And in that screen there, you can have multiple payment options, and it actually lets you reorder those payment options. So for example, I've got three cards in there, I think it's two cards in a PayPal account, and whichever one is at the top, that is the one that Apple will start with when it tries to charge you. And then if there's nothing in that account, or if there's something wrong, then it goes down, down, down. So what you would have to do, and this is why I say it, I don't think that it's a tenable solution, is that you would have to keep in mind when that subscription payment is coming up, and then you'd need to move that card to the top of the list right before that happened. Wow. That's not a great solution.
No.
I think that you might want to look into a managed Apple ID situation. If you do a managed Apple ID, then you can have one that's personal or one that's for this job and then one that's for the other. And it gets a little bit easier to switch between them, particularly if it's on an iPad. And I think that that might help with the payment switching. I don't quote me on that 100%, but I think that that would be something to look into, because being able to do that is a possibility. But
that seems like something like a corporation would want so that you could have your personal account, but you could have your corporate card or that kind of thing. So I can go into payment and shipping, and I have one card in there, but I can add another payment method.
And so you would add that second one, And then once you do, Leo, you'll see a little, the little three lines that pop up to the right whenever it's a list that can be reordered.
Okay.
And then you, whichever one is at the top, that's the one that Apple goes to first. So,
so you have to remember. So that would be the way to do that is if you, I mean, when you were going to charge something that you wanted, your accountant wanted to be on your corporate card, you'd switch. You just have to remember to switch back afterwards.
Yeah. So
every time, right?
That's not fun, right? You'd have to go in and manually do it, but that is a solution. That is an option.
So I just added my Apple card to payments, but that's going to default to that.
Yeah. If that's at the top now, yes.
It's at the top.
So there should be edit in the top right, I believe.
So, okay.
And then you can reorder you can switch whichever around. One goes at the top. Yeah.
Under edit, oh yeah, I can swap those around.
Yeah, so, and then whichever one goes to the top there on the, yep. Now,
so now the American Express
will
is.
Will go first. And
or
then,
I can make the Apple card.
Exactly.
I'd have to do that each time?
You'd have to do that each time.
Sheesh.
Yeah, so it's not a great solution.
You can use multiple payment methods.
Yeah, I think that would work, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can set a calendar.
Because a lot of times when I do these subscriptions, it's on an annual basis.
Right, you have to do it once a year.
That's true. Once a year, go in and swap it around. Yeah. Okay, that actually seems much more doable than every single month having to do that. But
when you're in the App Store, you can't. There's no drop down there to choose. You have to go into payments first.
Yep.
And by the way, you have to log in each time too because they want to protect you.
Yeah, usually you can Face ID though. If you've logged in with Face ID into the App Store recently, then that'll be there. Another option would be. Someone's kind of, I think,
I
maybe
bought something
bringing
I didn't
it up
buy.
Is link it to your PayPal. And then on the PayPal side, you could switch between the two cards. But I think that this is a little bit easier, especially like you said, if you're only doing it annually, this seems not too difficult. But we will include a link in the show notes. What is it? TechGuyLabs.com to the managed Apple IDs.
You just gave me, though, a thread I'm going to pull on.
Okay. Tug on it.
Because there might be some things like PayPal where you could have multiple cards and it would all go to, so Apple go to PayPal and then whatever's active in PayPal would be easier, right? Because you could swap that around.
Yeah, but is it easier to swap that around?
And can you do it? I wonder if there are payment solutions where you can have 10 cards in there.
And have it automatically.
And have it automatically choose. And then Apple doesn't have to know. Apple's just going to say, okay, charge that PayPal. Thing.
Yeah, like, you know, how they have, you know, the privacy app, how you can create things like.
Yeah, I use privacy. I don't think privacy will let you have a default card, though. It's
no.
But maybe, yeah, that's a really, maybe PayPal, I don't know. That's a really, see, that might be another way to handle it is a third party that looks to Apple like the same party.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's even exists, but that's an interesting. Sounds like a great new business
that's
for
a
you.
Good point.
We could call it Card 360. Yeah, that's a ticket. It's how it starts.
So yeah, I think if it's an annual subscription, just hopping in and changing that right before it happens, and maybe your accountant will thank you for that extra bit of work.
So great to see all you right, again well, after all this time.
Yeah, good to see you
on the. Yeah. On the Twit Netcam network.
That's right.
I had a fight with Tech TV because they wanted to call it a webcam, and which was the common term then. And I said, but it's not on the web. It's a netcam. And I don't know how I convinced them to call it a netcam, which I think has a little better sound to it. Don't you think? The netcam network?
Yeah.
It's got it definitely had a ring to it. Yeah. You know?
See? I wanted to also call this Netcasts, but nobody bought that one.
Yeah, you lost that one, but
because it's not.
It still lived on for several years, though.
Well, solely with me. finally, my marketing guy, Jerry, said, you can't keep calling it a Netcast. No one knows what the hell you're talking about. But it's such a better name than a podcast. And now, today, people go, what's a pod? Right? They don't remember iPods.
Well, no, but also people call them pods. I don't know if they call them nets.
For play on demand.
Who said that?
Everybody.
That's wild. Those are the same people who think Jeep stands for just every essential part.
Or Fiat. Fix it again, Tony.
Yeah, Tony. Whoever you are.
Thank you for your
thanks
call.
For the
great
call.
To catch up with you. Thank you. Have a great day.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye. I believe that's the sound of this episode powering down. Yes.
Is it? Oh, come on. It's only 1:14.
Well, I know we've got an audience.
I know we have. We already, the studio's audience is starting to filter in. But I would really like to do
quick email.
Okay. We haven't done an email today. That's a good idea.
I'll put up a shot clock.
Did we mailed the Newton message pad out to that guy, right? Last week.
John Ashley would maybe know.
Yeah, John Ashley mailed it out, I think. Google takeout photos, says Steve.
Yes.
I've been using Google Photos for several years now, but I am up to my 15 gigabyte limit. Yeah.
Oh, that'll happen.
Oh, man, I got 2 terabytes. I'm hitting the ceiling with 2 terabytes. and I want to move photos to a hard drive to free up space and continue using Google Photos storage. When I looked into Google Takeout, it lets me remove photos. Yeah, it does, to a hard drive. Yeah, but it separates the metadata from the pictures into a JSON file. This causes problems when rematching the data to picture later on. Also, the delete command is very limited in the number of photos I can delete per click. There is a way around this. There are a couple of ways around this. I did this by hand many moons ago, and I used a variety of tools. I've talked about this before to do this. But honestly, and it is a sponsor, so I'll have to disclaim this. I was really pleased when I found out MyLeo can import Google Photo Takeout directly from those zip files.
Yeah, specifically works with those.
And so it's very frustrating because Google does have Takeout. That's great, right? That was from day one. Google said, we don't want to ever make you trapped. But the way they made it so that you really never wanted to use it is they zip them up into file. You can say how big the file is. I think they've gone past the 2 gig limit, but they zip it up. They separate the EXIF into a JSON file, and they change the file names and all this stuff. So MyLeo is smart about the format. And so you still download all the zip files, but then you can import them into MyLeo. Now, the good news is MyLeo is free for one computer. So if you're using MyLeo, you'll see here there's all these different places, Facebook, Instagram, Android phones. Let's see, where's the Google Takeout? Maybe because I already did it. Photos, or maybe they don't do it anymore. I don't know. Let's see. Maybe it's just to use an existing folder. You download all your stuff and you import it. And MyLeo also will delete duplicates, which I found very handy because I have, of course, everything's in my Google Photos. I didn't want everything. I wanted the things that were in Google Photos only, right? Mm-hmm. So it deleted the stuff that was doubled. That was very smart. So I only got the new stuff.
Nice.
Where is that? I wonder if that's photos from Instagram, Flickr. I don't know. It seemed like they said in the past it said Google Takeout. Let's do a. There you go. Thank you. There's the MyLeo help file. Import from a Google. That's Google Photos. But does it use Takeout? I think it does. Yeah.
Use Takeout. Download.
Uses Takeout. Yeah. So it will understand that. That's how I did it. And I got, I don't know, 100,000 photos in there. So your piddly 15 gigabytes.
Will be fine. Bless you.
Excuse me. Shouldn't take too long. I will show you the more complicated way. And I think I've talked about this before. I used a pair of programs to get stuff out of my Google Photos. Excuse me. I think this hat's making me sneeze. Is that possible?
Leather? I thought you...
Is that possible?
You become allergic to leather?
Clean up Google Photos Takeout. I put this into a Notion page because I knew I wouldn't remember it. So I wrote a little script to unzip. I removed the JSON files because what I did is I used JHead, which is a free tool. I think it's Python, to take the EXIF files, move it into folders by year, month, day, renaming the file with the date and time. And then I use this really nice tool from Phil Harvey called the EXIF tool. These are both free, JHead and EXIF tool. The EXIF tool is written in Perl, but he keeps it up to date. You see the latest version is from April 18th, 2024, which is pretty recent, like 2 days ago. So this is a really powerful library. It's a command line application that processes all of these and cleans them up. So between JHead and EXIF tool, I was able to get those into better shape. That's when I was doing it by hand. I have to tell you, once I found Miley.
Yeah, it's like, okay.
Yeah, that's an archived
page.
Makes
it easier.
Yeah. But those are two good tools to know about, J-Head and EXIF tool. We'll put links in the show notes to both of those. They're handy. They work on Mac, Windows, Linux, because they're Perl and Python, I believe. Good question. One more. What do you say? Why are you laughing? Why are you laughing? Moving DNS off of Google from Tim. Hi, guys. I've been using Google DNS for several years as a personal for personal domain. I have a couple of Linux servers, a pfSense FW that I use a dynamic DNS client to update the relevant A records, if you know what I mean. I'm now looking for another provider that would support dynamic DNS updates. I was wondering if you have recommendations. Huh.
Wait.
So he's running a server. So this is the issue when you're running a server at home. What did we say last week? Don't
run a server at home. But if you're going to do it, even though we say don't.
Because your internet service provider with a home network does not guarantee you an static IP address, it changes. So you need to use something called DynDNS that periodically, usually it's running as a client on your server, checks to see what the IP address is and adds a forwarding so that you can point people at a static IP address, and then DynDNS will connect it to the actual IP address and your server will continue to work.
You know what I use?
What do you use?
Eero has
now, does it do that?
Has a feature, dynamic DNS built in.
Oh, that's very nice.
Yeah.
A good router, many routers actually do support DynDNS. So that's one thing to look at. Honestly, I'm not sure what else is out there.
Because the last time I looked into this doing it.
pfSense does it automatically, somebody's saying. YZF donor. Hello, YZF.
I was using a free thing for a while, and I did not end up liking it. Yeah. Cloudflare, of course, is an option. It has dynamic DNS. But yeah, I think
Cloudflare would be a very good choice, actually.
Yeah.
Cloudflare would probably be my first choice because they're very reliable. So that would be one to look at.
And you can get, it looks like,
and it's free usually.
Yeah, free with any Cloudflare.
In fact, these days, don't use DynDNS, which is a company that's done it for years. Either do it in your router, which is cool, or do it with Cloudflare. I think that's a great way to do it because Cloudflare will also give you other benefits. All right. I could do one more. Or do you want to do a call?
I don't think we have a call. So, yeah, let's do one more.
Okay. You don't want to, No.
I think it's a trap.
It's a trap. I don't care. Mirroring hard drives issue, says Shelley. Hi, Leo and Micah.
Howdy.
Shelley's in Kansas.
Oh.
I have followed you neighbor. Since Tech TV days, Leo. Twit Network is wonderful with all the helpful info. Love what you and Micah do.
Thank you.
I have an issue. It's driving me crazy because it doesn't seem to make any sense. I have two identical, ladies and gentlemen, Samsung external hard drives. They're both 4 terabytes.
Okay.
Take a note. I previously always manually saved to them, so they were a little different because I'd be cleaning up files, renaming folders on one drive, getting rid of some duplicate items. They're a little bit different. I formatted the one I want to make match. I did the backup once by manually copying and pasting. It's off by a significant amount, 256 gigabytes, essentially. So I formatted again, used free file sync, mirrored the drive, still 205 gigabytes difference. Random checks, looks like everything's there, but I don't see how it could be. It could be. Can you tell me what I need to be looking for? Why is the... So what she's basically doing is she thinks making a duplicate of the drive.
Uh-huh.
But the difference in drive consumption, it worries her. And there's a lot of reasons that could be. I wouldn't worry about that if it looks the same. Now, those aren't the tools I would use. So if you really want to make this as duplicate as possible, Samsung offers, every hard drive manufacturer offers a bit copy, sector copy tool. And that's going to give you identical, like the freeze size will match and everything, because it does, it says this, it doesn't know anything about files. This is the problem. You're doing a file copy, and there's slack on files. There's all sorts of reasons why a file might occupy more space or less space on one drive than another. Don't worry about that. You probably have all the files, but if you really want them to match, Samsung offers, probably on their website for download, a sector copying utility designed to duplicate a drive when you're moving from one drive to the other. That will go sector by sector, doesn't care about files, and just make sure all the sectors match. Then the file sizes will be, the usage will be identical. I wouldn't worry about the identical usage. My tool that I would use for something like this is called rsync. It's available on all Unix-style machines, Mac and Linux. I think there's even rsync. Well, you can use RoboCopy on Windows, but I prefer rsync. rsync is a very smart copying tool that will only copy file changes. In fact, you could have done it with rsync without deleting the contents of the original drive. It would have been much faster because rsync would look at each file and say, that's different, that's the same, that's different, that's the same, and only copy the changes. In any event, rsync is your friend for future. It's a command line. You'll have to learn how to use it. It's not hard. But I would say find the Samsung sector by sector copying tool, and that will do it.
Yeah, you told me about rsync, and I use that all the time.
Now. rsync is, oh, you use it. Good for you. Amazing tool. Comes on all Macs and Linux machines. I don't know. I'm sure there's an rsync for Windows. The idea of rsync is it's only copy the changes. So it's very efficient, and it does verification, so it's very effective.
That's what I like.
Copying is not very good. There's lots of errors get introduced, things like that. You want to check after copy to make sure it worked. But it's not surprising that there's a difference. It's the way drives are. Sometimes files can occupy more space, not logically, but physically. And that's all it is. It's probably harmless. All right.
Mostly harmless.
I think we should probably end now. I don't want to end. I like this show. I want to keep
doing
it.
But there's another show that's also great that's coming up.
And you and I are going to be on it. It's called This Week in Tech, our 19th anniversary show. We're going to have a live studio audience. Abrar Al-Hidi's on her way up. She's going to join us, as will Jason Howell, his first time return to the network since we summarily fired his ass, which was a mean thing to do. No, we had to lay him off because we ran out of money. And we don't want to run out of money anymore. And we love Jason still. We're going to tell you about his new thing that he's doing called Techsploder. We're going to support him. John, you're looking at me like I said a bad thing.
No. I mean, you
I
did.
Just feel, I feel terrible because we had to lay off people. Nobody ever wants to do that. And we don't want to ever do it again. So please join Club Twit and keep this boy from crying. I did cry. I shed tears. It was very hard. It's very hard with Ant and Jason and Victor. It was a sad day. We don't want to do that anymore. We like to keep doing what we're doing. So please, twit.tv/clubtwit. Micah Sargent, you're going to be back on Tuesday with iOS Today, on Thursday with Tech News Weekly, and next Sunday with Ask the Tech Guys.
Once again.
Did I miss anything?
You did not.
I will be here, you know, whenever I feel like showing up. What else? Oh, Stacy's Book Club's coming up Thursday. That's
sure
going
to tune
be
in
fun.
For that. Yeah.
If you haven't read We Are Legion, the first book in the Babaverse series, and you're in the mood, Dennis E. Taylor, highly recommend it. It's a great Audible listen to if you have an Audible account.
Twit.tv/ATG or Tech Guy Labs for the show notes, techguylabs.com for the show notes.
You can email us, ATG@twit.tv.
Yep. You can also call us during the week, 888-724-2884.
Leave a voicemail. Yeah, that's a nice way to do it. Hey, thanks everybody for joining us. That would be Micah Sargent.
And that there is Leo Lepore.
We'll see you next time. Have a great geek week.
Bye-bye.